I think when most people think of hiring a lawyer, they imagine the dispute that they're involved in and how upset or angry or scared they may be about that. They see a lawyer as someone, you know, with a sword and a shield going out to do battle for them. They think of them more as an intellectual warrior. In reality, the lawyers are working with people, with humans, and with their problems. They often have a basis in incredibly poor judgment. I used to refer to the book I was going to write, the working title, as Swimming in the Sea of Stupid. And every time I dive down and I look for the bottom, it's farther down than I thought I remembered it being, because people just can do the most odd things. So when you sit down with a group of lawyers and you start swapping stories about past cases, they're both sad because they're real problems, but they're also really sometimes incredibly humorous.
In your retirement letter, you also said goodbye to what you called the liars, haters, manipulators, takers, and other evildoers.
And they know who they are.
I
know who they are. And there have been a lot of them, and there will be more of them, and someone else can deal with them.
I would imagine there have been many times in your courtroom where you've come across genuinely bad, evil-minded people, and you've sent some of them to prison. What does that feel like when you do that?
Well, I mean, it's always mixed emotions. I mean, the most evil individual that I remember was the worst incest case I ever had. Can you imagine? If you've grown up in a family where you loved your mother and father and you look to them for protection and guidance, and now you're a juror and you're listening to this testimony about a guy who would make his daughters and his son perform oral sex on him at shotgun point, who would threaten, if they said anything, to bury their mother in the garden. He looked evil. He was evil. He did evil things. And so when you sentence someone like that, on one level, somewhat superficial level, there's some degree of satisfaction that now he's held accountable and he's going to go away and he can never hurt anyone again. But the greater feeling, the overwhelming feeling, is just sadness for these children.
You also said in your letter, you mentioned people in government who would run roughshod over the public. And that made me think right away of, you know, fairly recently when you used pretty strong language when you vacated the permit for a 9-story building in Traverse City. And you used the words hopelessly naive, talking about the city commission when they were gathering information about that project. What was it about that case that prompted such a strong reaction from you? I think some people were kind of taken aback by what you said.
I couldn't believe that they were doing what they were doing in a fashion that seemed to be absolutely oblivious to the financial consequences associated with it, and to have no understanding of such basic terms associated with public service. Like, what is infrastructure? Do you not realize that infrastructure is a street? It's a curb. It's a street light. And then to say, well, geez, we're not contributing any public money, and have no discussion of what the long-term financial consequences are, let alone the superficial, in my view, bizarre notion that to make Traverse City a better place, we need to subsidize parking spots for luxury condominiums. They are hopelessly naive or incompetent. And I think it's naive. These are not stupid people.
Does the job ever get to you? What I mean is you are a community-minded person, but yet, you know, I can imagine it might be hard for you. You might be out at the grocery store and there's somebody who was in your courtroom and didn't like a decision you made or something that you said. Do you get blowback from people?
You know,
is it hard for you to be out in public sometimes?
It's hard, but not for that reason. The thing that becomes emotionally overwhelming after a while is watching people who almost invariably, the vast majority of felons that I sentence, come from these chaotic, dysfunctional, one-parent families, they're characterized generally by alcohol abuse or some other form of substance abuse. There's often an overlay of physical abuse and, more often than not, sexual abuse. They need to be held accountable, but I get where they came from. You know, I could walk into any elementary school in these three counties today, and you let me look at the files, and I can tell you who's at risk.
What makes this the right time for you to retire?
Well, as I told others, I've been thinking about this for a while. I almost didn't run again last time. I like being a judge. I enjoy the challenge. But I've always thought, you know, there's time. There's time to do the things that I wanted, other things that I want to do. But you get to a certain point in life where you realize you've got way more past than you do future. But what I'm concerned with is how many years do my wife and I both have where we both can be healthy and productive and do other things. And, you know, once you get to my age, I'm 64 in a couple of weeks, that window starts to close. You know what the best thing of retirement has been? I've been living Jimmy Stewart's life for the last 2 days. Remember the movie, It's a Wonderful Life?
Yeah.
That's my last 2 days.
Well, you mean by that people are coming forward and you're seeing some of the positive impact that you've had in your career?
Yeah.
Well, that's nice. That's good. Judge Philip Rogers, pleasure to speak with you. Thank you so much.
I've enjoyed it very much. You guys take care.
All right.
Bye-bye.